From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Let me introduce you to an old friend of mine. Early 2000s Shai Ben-Yaakov.
Never made it as a wise man. I couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing.
The year was 2002. America was a year into the war in Afghanistan. The Dow was hovering around 8,000 points. And this was the most popular song in America.
This is how you remind me.
That's Nickelback's How You Remind Me for you youngsters. I had just graduated from college and had no idea what to do with myself. As I considered my options, I paid the bills with a job at the camping retailer REI. I was heavily into backpacking at the time, and the discounts I got fed my high-tech gear addiction. I can hear your eyes rolling. Anyway, I mostly worked evenings, but every so often, my boss would call me and tell me she needed me to work a morning the next day, usually because someone was calling out. I would wince at the idea of getting up before 11, but I'd set my alarm and get myself there by 9. Sometimes. When my schedule changed, it was sometimes a mild inconvenience. But to more than 100,000 workers in Philadelphia, many working multiple jobs to make ends meet, a last-minute schedule change can be a major family hardship. Legislation pending in Philadelphia would require some employers to let workers know their schedules 2 weeks in advance. It could be the stability those workers are looking for, or it could end up harming those it's meant to help. Today's show, how's your schedule looking? WHYY reporter Aaron Mozell visited Seattle recently. That city has had a similar law on the books for about a year. So Aaron, you went out to Seattle to see how this law was playing out. What does the law do exactly?
The whole intent is to give workers some predictability. That's the key here. And that's predictability with their work schedule specifically. So the idea is so that they know at least 2 weeks in advance exactly what hours they're going to have, but also what days those hours are going to fall on. So that if they have doctor's appointments, if they have a class, they know that they can't work those days and that they can kind of do what they need to do outside of work. There's also some penalties for the employer. So there's this whole concept of what in Seattle they call premium pay. It's a premium to the employer because they have to lay out extra money for the employee if they change their schedule last minute, really just within the two-week period that they put out the schedule.
So if they want to go inside that two-week schedule and they just need to get somebody in, they're going to have to pay a little bit more for it.
Right. So if they take you off the schedule, if you need to stay later, if they cut your hours, then that triggers payment. They have to be compensated for them messing around with their schedule.
How have businesses reacted to this law?
There are real concerns from the retail industry that this is going to lead to employee turnover.
This ordinance is a challenge for the companies, but how it really impacts might very well be that workers have fewer hours worked.
So when I talked to John Engber, who's the director of Seattle's Retail Industry Coalition, he raised a couple interesting points.
If shifts go unfilled, then workers get less hours on their paycheck.
The idea is that a company may have someone call out sick, but they may not want to call somebody in because that will trigger this premium pay. They'll have to literally pay extra to have someone come in.
The example is a pharmacy will not run if its pharmacist is out sick. So they will call in a pharmacist and pay the penalty wage to make sure that the pharmacy is open. However, a cashier who calls in sick, the store will probably just operate with, you know, fewer employees for that day as opposed to calling in an extra cashier.
Which means that there are less people on the floor helping with customers, which means there could be longer lines, which means customers may choose to go somewhere else if that's a consistent experience that they have. For the employee, that means that no one is working those hours.
And that would be a regrettable result of a well-meaning ordinance.
One of the ideas behind this legislation is to give employees a chance to get more hours because most of them are part-time. And so if a manager is just not calling anybody in, those are just hours that go unworked. And so that idea is just going out the window. And so that's a concern that people will leave and go somewhere else that is not covered by Fair Work Week legislation.
So let's move across the country to Philadelphia. Philadelphia has proposed this legislation. It was proposed by Councilwoman Helen Gim, right?
Poverty is not inevitable. Poverty is manufactured. And we can talk about this until we're blue in the face, or we can do something about it. And today, we're going to choose to do something about it.
City Council recently held a hearing on the legislation. What happened?
It was a nearly three-hour hearing, tons and tons of testimony, mostly in support of this legislation.
You know, there are women cleaning rooms right now, just a block away from here, who don't know what time they will be leaving tonight. I've talked to mothers who have to pay $1 a minute in late fees from their daycare when they can't get out of work on time. Let's say you got two kids in daycare and you're 30 minutes late to pick them up. That's $60 that you have to pay.
I made $5,000 less in 2017 than I did in 2016 because of reduced hours. Last minute scheduling may be a good business for my employer, but let me tell you, as an employee, it creates a lot of challenges.
Having two jobs that are constantly changing is scary. If I'm getting my schedule sent to me randomly, I don't know how much I'm going to get paid. I'm stressed out all month because I don't know whether or not I'm going to be able to pay my bills. If I had a Fair Work Week, I'll have so much less stress.
There wasn't a whole lot of opposition that testified, at least, at the hearing, but the folks that did were mostly from the hospitality sector.
I'm a working mother raising four children while maintaining a demanding job, so I empathize with any team members who may have concerns about their schedules.
There was Joanne Wren. She's a general manager at the Logan Hotel, a big hotel here.
I would like to stress that our opposition to the bill does not seek to discount our team members' hard work, determination, and dedication to their jobs.
We offer hotel guests a great deal of flexibility to cancel or change their plans.
There's also Jay Delavecchia, general manager for the Westin.
While this is great for guests, it can cause unexpected changes to our schedules and staffing. We do our best to provide our staff with as much notice as possible about their schedules. Team members receive their schedules with a minimum, and this is a minimum, of 1 week advance notice, and we always aim, and I think most successfully, adhere to the posted schedules. A two-week schedule with zero tolerance is not realistic.
At this point, what are the odds of this legislation passing, do you think?
So it seems from the numbers that this has a really good chance of passing here in Philadelphia. Already there are eight co-sponsors of this bill. In City Council, in the Philadelphia City Council, you only need nine, that's the majority, nine votes to pass a law, so, because there are 17 members of council. So really this just needs one more person to sign on, and it's going to head to Mayor Jim Kenney's desk for a signature.
And has he indicated that he is or isn't likely to sign it?
He hasn't officially indicated, but testimony from Rich Laser, who's the deputy mayor of Labor, the day of the hearing sounded pretty promising on that front.
The administration supports the goal of a Fair Work Week for Philadelphians. We believe that one full-time job should be enough for an individual to provide a life for themselves and their families.
They are interested in getting this passed, so I would be surprised if he didn't sign it. But you know, you never know his politics.
It seems in listening to the two sides like there's actually a pretty compelling argument on both sides of this issue. If this passes here, how do you think it will play out?
Well, I think for workers, it'll be a pretty big deal. I mean, you got to remember we're talking about Philadelphia, which is the poorest big city of the 10 largest cities in the country. So there's a lot of people who are depending on these type of jobs to make ends meet. They may, in often cases, be depending on more than one job, which is important when we're talking about scheduling, because you want to know what days you're working and what hours you're working at your one job so that you know how to schedule your second job. You want to know if I can make it on time to pick up my kid from school. Can I make it on time? I mean, there's all these kinds of things that happen outside of work that you need to be able to schedule, including another job.
And those are kind of amplified in Philadelphia because we're talking about a bigger number of workers and a bigger percentage of the population.
Exactly. So in Seattle, you're talking about a very small slice, a relatively small slice of the labor force. In Philadelphia, we're talking about 130,000 people, which is roughly 20% of the city's labor force. So this is a lot of people working these jobs that depend on these jobs. And, you know, this isn't going to solve the issue of, this isn't going to, you know, get people out of poverty. I mean, most of the people working these jobs are working part-time. They're making under $8 an hour. But it does give them a chance at making more money and making life a little more comfortable by knowing how much money is going to be in their wallet and by knowing what they can schedule outside of work.
How does this law get enforced? Is it going to be in part the responsibility of workers to sort of call out their employers if they're not following the law?
I think there will be a certain amount of responsibility on workers. It's an interesting question you raise because these are folks who may or may not feel comfortable doing that. One of the big reasons is that they need this job, right? As we talked about, these are folks who really don't have, you know, higher education, don't have a college degree. So they're relying on these minimum wage jobs to kind of get through life and pay for life. And there is some concern possibly that if they raise an issue that they may lose their job. Now, there's supposed to be protections against retaliation for workers, but I still think that it'll have to come from the workers, but there may be some workers who are hesitant to do that.
What's next for this legislation? When does it come up in council again?
So we've had this hearing that's required, and then as all bills in city council do, it goes for what's called a first reading, and that'll happen this week. And then if everything kind of goes according to plan, there's nothing to sidetrack it, it should be on track to be voted on by the full council at the end of this month, specifically November 29th, that session. And as I said, it appears that Councilwoman Helen Gim has the votes and that it will pass at that point.
Okay. Aaron, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
That's all for today. The Y is produced by me and Annette John Hall. Follow us on Twitter at Shai Ben Yaakov and at Annette JH. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. I'm Shai Ben Yaakov. We'll be back tomorrow.